2026 regular season win totals are here. Where's FSU at and how do we feel about it? We're also going to talk about baseball's statement sweep in Winston-Salem over number 12 Wake Forest and good NIT basketball. It's good night for basketball season as the Noles declined the NIT bid. The season is officially over. We're going to share some thoughts on the season as a whole. So three big time sports to talk about. We'll throw in a little bit of softball there at the end too. But man, welcome back, Nole Nation. We are the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. Good to be with you guys. Look, we got a lot to cover today, man. This is a fully packed show, fully loaded for you guys. Lots of sports talk, man. Excited about this one. But, Michael, the win totals are here. Now, it's only spring. We're still a long way away from football season. But these are the things that start to get you excited for the fall, just to see where expectations lie. And so we're going to dig into all that today.
Yeah, like, you know, as you said, like, as we're in the spring, you're starting to see what the national media, what the bettors, the bookies down in Vegas, what they're thinking about us. And that kind of gives you a little bit of insight to say, hey, this could be it. Or are they underrating our program or are they overrating our program as well? And then, of course, like with baseball, man, what a weekend. I watched every bit of that. Yeah. I had to, obviously, when I was on the plane, I was like relying on you to pray really hard that they pulled yeah. that game out. But so grateful for the baseball team. And it's going to be a full episode.
Yeah, man. Excited to get into it. So let's jump right in. FanDuel, one of the largest sports books in the country, as most of you guys know, they all do this. They release their preseason regular season, that is important to remember, win totals for the season ahead in the spring. Basically, they gauge expectations of where they think teams are. Now, as we know with the experts in Vegas, right, they put a ton of resources into getting this right. It doesn't mean they always get it right. I mean, this is a very inexact science at an unpredictable game. So you're really not applying a whole lot here as far as what it's actually going to look like, but they do their best to get it right. And a lot of times they're pretty darn close. So it at least gives you an idea, to your point, of where the national media, the bettors and things like that, where season expectations lie based on a ton of factors. And so the big question is, where does Florida State fall in all this? And to be honest, Michael, it's a little bit disappointing where this win total rolled in at. 6.5 is the number set by FanDuel for Florida State in 2026. And to kind of, when you look at the numbers next to that, the money leans towards the under, right? You get better odds for taking the over, which means you're taking more risk because it's less likely to happen. So Vegas is thinking Florida State's going to fall short of that 6.5 win mark, end up somewhere between 6 or below wins. Now, you know, this is a big year, right? I mean, for Mike Norvell and this program as well, a lot of us do think he's probably got to top that number to keep his job. Like, if you fall short, you know, there's also that conversation of if he makes a bowl, which would be 6 wins, maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. But it feels like if you fall short of a 6.5 win total,
yeah,
that might be the axe that finally gets him out of here. And I think they're going to need to top that number to be able to do it. And right now, like I said, 6.5 is disappointing. The money leans toward the underside. Do I think they can top that? I do. I think there's a path for Florida State to get the over in this situation with the season coming up, you know, with some of the teams they play and some of the pieces that they brought in. Michael, I'm not going to say that I'm going to put my money on him to go over right now. Not until we see some things, but I think there is a path for them to reach the over. But right now, man, Vegas is just not confident that's going to happen. And, you know, I think the first thing to get out of the way, and then I'll throw it back to you for some thoughts on this is unacceptable for year 7 of a tenure at a place like Florida State, right? This should, in any given year, should be the floor for a terrible season, right? Florida State fell way below expectations and went 7-6. That should be the conversation. It should never be the 5-7s. It should never be the 2-10s. I mean, especially when you play in the ACC, because in any given year, as you know, as those watching know, you pretty much get 2 gimme games. Now, you had obviously where you played Memphis, who's a really good G5 team. That wasn't a gimme game and you lost it, but you pretty much get 2 wins right out of the gate. And so with a 12 game season, you just need to win 50% of your remaining games to hit that 7-game mark. That should not be impossible in a conference where you invest more than 90% of the other football programs, right? I mean, of course, you have Florida in there too, and there's usually the other Power 4 team like the Alabama that you've had, LSU's in the past. But really, if you count the 2 wins, all you have to do is have a winning record in the ACC at 5-3 while we're currently playing 8 conference games before it goes to 9. plus the two cupcakes, that gives you seven wins. So this 6.5 number should be the minimum that we're talking about at Florida State. And this should not be a problem for you to hit against, again, competition that you invest more in your football program than. So it's frustrating and it's unacceptable that it's at 6.5, 7 years into the tenure. And I think there is a path for Florida State to hit the over. I'm just not confident it's going to happen. But we're going to talk about a lot of that as we go further into the show. But, man, just give me some thoughts on that initial number and just kind of how it feels. Like you said the other day, you got to give some sugar, a spoonful of sugar to take the tough medicine. This is the tough medicine.
It's a tough medicine. Like, now, do you think, Jesse, that President McCullough and Peter Collins and Michael Alford are looking at that win total over under and looking at Mike Norvell's contract and is going,
Your annual payout should not be more than the wins you expect, right?
Exactly.
You shouldn't be getting $10 million a year to win six, and it should be you should be getting 6.5 to win 10. We have a little imbalance factor here.
We have a problem here. The odds don't match up in your favor. Now, exactly. You would think, Jesse, you would think, and I hate to give us more medicine, but you would think that just FanDuel putting that out should be a fireable offense at Florida State.
7 years into your tenure.
7 years into your tenure. FanDuel, which, again, going back to Jesse's point earlier, it's not an exact science, but we all know that these bookies, they're exchanging billions of dollars, right? They got spies at every single program. They don't make this stuff up. They're more accurate than they are inaccurate, right? So they have a good feel on this stuff. It should be a fireable offense that you're 7.5 years into your tenure, and they're saying at a program like Florida State. Now, I'm a pull of Mike Norvell Hill, Jesse, and he's, you know how he always says, I know what a championship looks like. Well, we know what a championship program looks like. We know what an elite program looks like, and it don't look like this. And you're 7.5 years in, and they're basically saying that you might win 6.5 games, and most people believe that the money is going to the under. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, the bar should not be set at bowl eligibility at a program like Florida State that has 16 ACC championships and 3 national championships. I mean, I understand, you know, we've fallen on tough times. I get that. But there's no excuse for it to be that low this far into the tenure. Year one or two, maybe. I understand that. But it just shouldn't be that, right? But again, it doesn't mean they can't hit the over, right? We get back to where, yes, these – to your point, these sports books, it's going to cost them millions to potentially billions if they get these numbers wrong consistently. Correct. So they have to put a lot into it. So it is right more than it's wrong, but that doesn't mean it's not wrong too.
Correct.
And for example, in 2022, Florida State's win total was at 6.5 in the regular season. Keep that in mind. And they won 9 regular season games. Right. So they beat the number by a pretty good amount. And it's possible. They showed it's possible. In 2025, it was at 7.5, and they only won 5. So you can miss to the downside, too. It is certainly possible, as we have seen in the past. But, you know, back to my point, I do think Florida State has to meet that mark for Mike Norvell to be able to keep his job in what it feels, should be a make-or-break year for his tenure. Now, you know, when you talk about win totals on a season, and obviously – you know, the first thing you'll do is you'll look at your number, you'll kind of stomach how you feel about that, and then you look around at everybody else's number to kind of feel about how you feel comparative to the competition. Now, the one thing that a lot of people don't consider into these is your strength of schedule. Obviously, if you have a team that's not playing Florida and Alabama out of conference and things like that, it might not be as good a team as you, but they might have a higher win total than you because of their schedule. So it does make a pretty big difference who you play and how good they're going to be. So what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about Florida State's schedule and the teams, their win totals that stack up against you this year. We're going to share some thoughts on that, how maybe Florida State can get to that over number and what might lead to the under. So I'm going to throw a slide up here just for those of you watching on YouTube as we start talking some numbers. If you're listening on the podcast, we'll make it all make sense for you. But we're going to look at the win totals for Florida State's opponents in order. We are not going to count Central Arkansas because they don't put a number out for them.
Right.
And also New Mexico State's not Power 4, so their number's not available right now either. So this is only the Power 4 opponents. And do keep in mind before we get into this, as we mentioned, Florida State's win total is at 6.5. So starting off the Power Four slate for Florida State, you obviously should have a win over New Mexico State by the time you get to the SMU game. SMU sitting at 8.5 wins. That's a pretty decent number to think about. You know, if you get the over, you're 9, you're probably playing in Charlotte. At Alabama, 8.5 win total for Alabama. That feels a little bit low for Kalen DeBoer getting to be number, you know, year 3 in their tenure. I know they have a pretty decent schedule there, but, you know, that's going to be another tough game that you're going to have to win on the road. Then Virginia was a little bit of a shocking number for me, down to 7.5 after an 11-win season under Tony Elliott last year. Obviously, Vegas is not buying that they can maintain the success that they had last year. And we're going to talk about a lot of these games coming up here in just a second. But these numbers are interesting when you start to see the ones that are close to Florida State. You know, Louisville, another program here, 7.5 win total. And Louisville is a program that usually feels like they finish to the upside of that 7.5 number. Yeah. You know, usually not to the low side, but that number was maybe a little bit lower than I expected to Louisville. Now you have to go up there and play, and we know yeah. Florida State has had a lot of trouble winning road games. Of course, Miami sits on top of the ACC at 10.5 wins. That's really high expectations, but when you pay $10.5 million for a quarterback, you should win 10.5 games, you know, exactly. games, right? So it kind of goes along with the price tag that they pay there. But again, I think it just speaks to that's another tough game on your schedule, and it also happens to come on the road. Clemson, another surprising number here, 7.5. This has got to be a little bit of a gut punch for those, you know, around Clemson.
Fighting Dabos.
The yeah. Fighting Dabos. You know, I was going to say orange and purple, but the Fighting Dabos works perfectly here. There's some change. New OC there, new quarterback. Kate Klubnik's gone. They lost a lot off of that squad from last year. That was a very underperforming team. 7.5 is a really low number. That, you know, last year was the worst year they've had since Dabo had the losing season and almost got fired. 7.5 is pretty low, but it just goes to show you that there are some teams within reach of you, if nothing else. Now, you go to Boston College next. Terrible season last year. Another predicted terrible season at 3.5 wins for the Eagles there. At Pitt, 7.5 wins, looking like a bowl season for Pitt. You know, they're a perennial 8-win team that kind of yeah. sneaks up and gets a couple good seasons here and there. NC State doing NC State things. 6.5 win total on the season. This is another team that has – I don't even want to call it a glass ceiling. It's more like a concrete ceiling because they cannot get above 9 wins. So 6.5 for NC State there. You get them at your place. And then Florida, first year under new coach John Summerall, comes in at 7.5 wins here. Now, the takeaway from looking at the schedule is 9 of the 10 Power 4 teams on your schedule are predicted to at least be a bowl team. It's not an easy schedule by any means, right? That kind of shows you there. And I know bowl, as we talk about with Florida State, bowl is not the bar, right?
Correct.
But typically a team that at least makes bowl eligibility is going to present a challenge more often than not, right? When you look at how tough a schedule is. But, you know, when I look at these numbers, Michael, and I look at the difficulty of the schedule and where Florida State is and where Florida State should be and this upcoming season, how you get north of that 6.5 number, to me, there are two truths about this season, right? And the first truth is you are just straight up going to finally have to win a road game.
Yep.
Point blank, period. There's just no way around it. This road schedule is tough. It doesn't do you any favors. You got to go at Louisville. You got to go at Miami. You got to go at Pitt on a short week, at Boston College, which is a place that always gives us fits, at Alabama. It's not going to be easy. But, and the problem is every team that you go on the road against has a higher win prediction than you, than Boston College. You have got to win that BC game. There is no way around it. And you need yep. to find a way to win some of the games that are closer to you, which is point number two for me, right? This is the second truth. You've got to win some of these coin flip games, right? You have a lot of similar projected teams to you that are coming to your place. Now, Florida yep. State hasn't won a road game in 2 years, but they did go 5-2 at home last year.
Right.
They blew out Wake. They blew out Virginia Tech. They beat Alabama. They were good at home. That's the point. You need to beat the Virginias that have yep. a one game higher win total than you. That yep. basically what Vegas is saying is they're a little bit better, but by the time you factor in maybe a home field advantage, these teams are almost a draw on paper, right? Right. Like they might be a 3-point favorite in your place, and that's about the most it's going to be. So you need to beat the Virginias. You took them to double overtime in an 11-win season at their place on a Friday night. Mm. You took NC State down to the wire last night or last year before you doinked a punt off your head and ended up melting down the last few minutes. But you took that game down to the wire in their place on a Friday night. Those are the games, if you want to get north of that 6.5 number, you need to win those this year. You need to beat Florida in your place in year one under a new staff. So to me, that's the two truths for this season of how Florida State gets north of that 6.5 number. You have got to win a game on the road. You cannot end this season 0-15 in road games in the last 3 years. It might be 1-14, but it can't be 0-15.
Correct.
And then some of those really kind of equal footing teams that, let's be honest, you probably have more talent than, they just don't believe in what you're doing with it. You need to win those games too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, put that graphic back up, because I think the one thing, one of the things that stuck out to me is that SMU game, okay? They're projecting
probably the biggest game of the season to me.
Probably the biggest game of the season, and they're projecting it at 8.5, which means based on, and I'm not sure if SMU is playing the 9 conference game this schedule this year, but what they're projecting is that SMU is a loss for you. Okay, they are. So they're projecting SMU as a loss for you based on that, right? They're believing that SMU is going to win. I'm assuming there are 2 cupcake games and then 6 conference games is somewhere in there, right? So that could potentially be a loss that they're projecting for you. Virginia is coming to your place, right? They're at 7.5, just like you are. You cannot allow them to beat you again. Now, fortunate enough, Florida State, I think, if I remember correctly, has not lost to Virginia at home. I believe all the losses to Virginia have happened at in Charlottesville and not at home. Jesse will fact check me there. Obviously, Louisville, you have recently struggled to win at Louisville, though I do remember the last game, I believe, you beat them with Tate Rodemaker at their place. So, you know how to win there. So you need to go and find that win. Obviously, you're going to Miami. Go ahead and chalk that as a loss. You have Clemson. You have Clemson coming to your place. You've got to find a way to win that game. I think SMU and getting Clemson at home, if you can get those two games, man, that's a great, I think you, because my assumption is you've won against Virginia. You should beat Virginia, and you found a way to pull out that Louisville game. Boston College, as you talked about, is a very, for some reason, that place gives us just the ugh. So you got to figure out how to win there. You're on the road at Pitt, and you got NC State at home. You got Florida at home. You've got to find a way to try to at least make a dent. But I think the road games and that SMU game are going to be so pivotal for this team this year.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree, because you have got to get that SMU game. And you've got to win some home games because, again, like we said, that road schedule does you no favors. I mean, for a team that hasn't won a road game in 2 years, do you think that the first game I'm going to predict you to win is going to be in Bryant-Denny against Alabama?
No.
Probably not. You know, is it going to be at Louisville on a Friday night? It could possibly be. To your point, they did it. Mike Norvell did it. That's important, right?
Yes.
Obviously. Also, you look at the Miami road game. That's going to be a tough one. So you've got to win the winnable road games, right? You have got to be able to go get that Boston College win. And to your point, Virginia did beat you in Tallahassee just one time in the series in 2011 by 1 point.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, you're catching Clemson in a bit of a rebuild. You're catching Virginia after they lost the quarterback that basically led them to 11 wins. You know, you're catching some of these teams. You're getting NC State at home. Yes, I know they got CJ Bailey.
Yeah.
But those are the teams that they're – what Vegas is telling you, what these numbers are telling you is that they're not that much better than you. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to win those games because you get home field advantage. And to my point, Florida State was better at home last year at least. So to me, that's how you get north of that number, right? And to do that – again, I think it's certainly possible. I think really what Florida State, if the quarterback position can work out maybe a little bit better than we thought, whether that's Sperry, whether that's Daniels, probably going to be Daniels. Let's just say, you know, he's 25% better than Tommy Castellanos was, and you stay healthy throughout the course of the year. It's year 2 in the new systems. You don't have any major injuries. I think you can get to seven wins, right? Yeah. I don't think that's a problem. Now, seven wins is still not good enough. Even if you hit the over is not good enough. It should be right. The way over is right. What we should be aiming for. But yeah, I mean, I think you got to get over. And, you know, the other thing that I want to talk about here too is just the conference picture. And, you know, we say that Florida State's path is tough, and it is, because, you know, when we get into this ACC numbers, you'll kind of see some of the things I'm talking about where you basically get to play the best of the conference.
Yep.
You also have Alabama and Florida, but, you know, in the modern era where I'm not saying Florida State's going to play for an ACC championship next year, but you don't have to win all your games if you want to make the playoffs, right? You can just get through the conference path. And so when you talk about the ACC numbers here, when you look at the conference, it's so jammed up, it's so compressed that they're basically telling you that you have one or two favorites, and then anyone else can really be a dark horse from there. And so let's take a look at the numbers real quick as I pop these up. Obviously, Miami takes the lead at 10.5 wins, as we talked about earlier. SMU is actually the second highest in the ACC at 8.5. Virginia, Louisville, Clemson, and Pitt are all tied at 7.5. And so here's the fun part of that, right? These top 2-4-6 teams, you play every one of them. So that, thank you, ACC. Thank you, Jim Phillips, for that. And then, you know, FSU, Cal, Georgia Tech, NC State are all sitting here at 6.5 wins. Wake, Duke are at 5.5. UNC, Syracuse at 4.5. BC, Stanford at 3.5. But my point was, there's a lot of compression in the conference. There are 10 teams floating right around that bowl eligibility mark between either 5.5, if you hit the over, you're bowl eligible, 7.5, or if you hit the under, you're still bowl eligible. Miami's the only team in double digits, and SMU's up there at 8.5. But, you know, again, man, what that tells me is that in this season, they expect Miami to be pretty darn good. They think SMU has a really good chance to be good. But anywhere on that list that we talked about, from Virginia at 7.5, Louisville, Clemson, Pitt, FSU, Cal, NC State, Georgia Tech, Wake, Duke, all the way down at 5.5, any one of those teams,
can
you're a coin flip game away from jumping the leapfrogging the other. And so to me, it tells you that all you got to do is overachieve by a little bit, and you can be at the top half of the conference. But what you can't have happen is come in with a 7.5 win estimate, go 5-7, finish 15th in the conference.
Yep.
You just cannot let that happen again. Now, the one team you may be thinking, wait, we're missing a team. The one team that does not have a win total so far is Virginia Tech. I think they're still trying to figure out what's going on with James Franklin and that team with so much change. They have not put a number out for them yet. Now, to my point again about the conference, there were six teams that were higher than you, and you play all of them, which are the top six teams in the conference. So, again, your out-of-conference is relatively tough with Florida and Alabama, and your conference schedule is one of the toughest in the ACC. But, man, I mean, like I said, the fact that you get all this compression in the conference and everybody's right around – it's not like you got four teams at 8.5 or a team at 9.5 and then Miami up at 10.5. Outside of Miami, it's pretty much wide open for anybody. And so, you know, all you got to do is just win a couple extra games that maybe you shouldn't have, and you're right in the thick of the ACC picture.
Yeah, and the goal, if I'm Mike, the goal should be, we got to win. Let's protect the home first.
Yeah.
Let's protect our home schedule. So we got to win every game at home, right? And if you think about it, what's the most difficult home game on the schedule?
It's got to be either SMU or Clemson. And Clemson's sitting there at 7.5 with a lot of questions themselves. And SMU, you know, they got a good quarterback in Kevin Jennings, but they're certainly not unbeatable.
They're not unbeatable. And Clemson, you know, Clemson isn't the Clemson from, you know, 5 years ago. It's right. Not the Clemson you're walking into. They're breaking in a whole new quarterback this year. They're breaking in a new offensive coordinator. You know, they're going to replace a lot of that defensive star power they had as well, too. So, like, you've got to protect your home. You got a Florida team coming in that's brand new. Right. Brand new coaching staff.
Yep.
Yes. You got that running back who basically ran all over you and your mom last season. He's coming back, but
they don't know what they're doing. I mean, they got the Georgia Tech quarterback, but he's not played a lot of meaningful snaps.
Exactly. So you got to protect your home schedule, and then you've got to win those winnable road games. Right. You've got to win those winnable. You do that, you should hit this. You should hit the over on this win loss total easily. But again, this team has not won a road game in 2 years, right?
Yeah,
and so I think that becomes the issue. Like if I'm Mike Norvell, I'm just thinking, we've got to win our home games, and we have to win the winnable road games. Now, on those road games that are more difficult, like Bryant-Denny Stadium, whatever, hey, we'll put our best effort forward. We'll see what we get. But we've got to win these home games, no matter what. And those when we go to BC, man, we need to be, this game needs to be over in the first quarter.
Yep.
Like I always like to say, those games like that, you've got to have those over in the first quarter. You've got to protect the home schedule. You got to win the winnable road games.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because again, in any world, you should beat New Mexico State and Central Arkansas or whatever it is. And if you don't, you should be fired on the spot. So it shouldn't even matter, right? But you're already starting with two.
Right.
So you only need five more wins, and you got Boston College on there who's at 3.5 win total. So you should, in theory, before you even have to wake up and play hard, you should be at 3 wins. So now you just need to get 4 more. But, you know, last year, all you had to do was get 1 more to make a bowl, and you just couldn't do it. So for me, I hate the 6.5 number because it's a tough number, man. Yep. It's a tough number because I have doubt about trusting this coaching staff and this team to get there. But I do have a feeling in my gut that they can get there. Yeah. I think they can. I mean, you know, how many teams in the ACC, not named Miami, have Trey Wisner, have Deuce Robinson? How many have these types of guys on their roster? You have Jabril Rawls. You have a couple of guys who are really talented, a Chris Jones at linebacker, the Desir twins. Like, you got some legitimate dudes on this team. It's trusting the coaching staff to put it all together and turn it into wins on Saturdays or Fridays or Mondays or whatever day we're playing. I think that's the hard part, right? 6.5 is a disappointing number, but it's okay if it turns out to be like 2022. Okay, well, I see your 6.5 and I raise you to 9. Like, if you get 7 or 8, it's not where we want to be, but you feel like, okay, maybe we're at least out of the ditch from where we've been the last 2 years. But again, 6.5 should never, bowl eligibility should never be the standard. And the money tells you that it leans to the bottom side. And, you know, when we talked in a very previous episode a couple months ago where we did the schedule reveal, right now I'm not taking the over. I just need, especially with a closed camp where you can't see anything about this team, you don't know anything about this team. Maybe if they come out and they beat, I know it's not going to mean a lot with New Mexico State, but if they beat them 70-0 and then beat SMU, all right, I think we're on our way to the over. But until I see that, right now, I have to lean towards the under myself, and that's a real big disappointment 7 years into a tenure.
Now, Jesse, if you lent me some of your money, I might bet the over. But with my money?
Can you bet in cents?
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care.
I'm a nickel slots guy, yeah, okay? Because I can't stand to lose more than about a nickel at a time. So yeah. I stick to my nickel slots.
See, and that's and again, not to harp on the media policy, but like, that's the issue. Like, if we could have seen what this team was like, if we could have seen some of the practices, seen how these guys are being developed, how the coaching is going this year without a Gus Malzahn, then absolutely inject me with that. I mean, yeah. Me, but until then, you just can't. And the thing is about it, the thing about this, Jesse, too, is the majority of these programs outside of Miami for sure, and even more than Clemson, I believe. And I'm just that's just assuming based on Dabo's whole thing about NIL, you're spending more than the rest of these teams are.
Yeah.
Okay. You might not be spending more than them on a particular position, but in total, you're spending way more on these teams.
You're probably spending more on your head coach too.
Exactly. You should be better than this. You should not be afraid of playing NC State. You should not be afraid of the first game. We should not be saying right now that SMU could make or break the season. We should not be saying that because we should be expecting a win. And those type of games.
Yeah, who the hell is SMU? Like, this little AAC team that's not, like, found its way wandered into the ACC's backyard? Like, exactly, to your point, you shouldn't. And sorry, SMU, I got no bragging rights over you.
Yeah, exactly. But
you're right. I mean, to your point, you shouldn't. But I think, again, to your point that you made before, where with closed camp and all that stuff, it's like, how do you inject the enthusiasm into the fan base? Because this is just kind of another gut punch. It's like, 6.5 wins. Wow, that sounds so exciting. I can't wait for the season to get here so we can win 6 games. You know what I mean? And so that's the hard part. And I know it's springtime. It's still talking season. And I was listening to a national show the other day. And, you know, it's funny how every report from every camp is all positive. Everyone's excited. Everyone's program has been injected with steroids, you know, throughout the spring. So everyone's feeling real good about it.
Lester rolls, all of that.
Exactly. And then like it comes, you know, and then it comes to game time and things go differently. And so we'll see how it all plays out. Again, Vegas can get these numbers wrong. They do it all the time. I do want to reiterate that I feel there is a strong path for Florida State to get to that over number if some things hit for and sure. go right. I think they very well can. It's just you got to see it, man. Again, it's come down to a trust factor with this coaching staff. So 6.5 is not a very confidence-instilling number 7 years into Mike Norvell's tenure, but you know what, man? It's the number they got. And so I think for me to wrap up this segment, I think Mike Norvell, to your point, when the admin sees this, I think Mike Norvell needs to see this and be like, okay, man, I accept this challenge that I know this is not good enough.
Yep.
And we're going to prove you wrong and go win some games. And so we'll see. To be determined. We'll just leave it at that. So let us know if you're watching on YouTube in the comments, what would you take if you had to put your dollars on it? Would you take the over or the under? And I know the smart money right now is probably the under, but come on, Mike Norvell, give us the over. Just hit the over. Let's go. So before we jump into the next segment that we're going to talk about, which is a team that had a great weekend up in North Carolina, let me first bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys have great FSU gear for every sport. Now, the round ball sports have a ton of big matchups at home this week. You got Texas Tech coming to the Plex. You got NC State top 10 coming to Hauser this weekend. You probably need some new Noel gear. And as you can see in the slide, if you're watching on YouTube, they got baseball gear, they got basketball gear, they got softball gear, they got everything that you need. So if you're going to be in Tallahassee, make that your first stop at 1415 Timber Lane Road. Or if you're not going to be in Tallahassee, you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. That's online or in store. Code SPEAR to save 10%. So we really appreciate you guys supporting Alumni Hall. My guy Ralph Spartan071 said the other day, if baseball wins the sweep, he's going to have to buy something from Alumni Hall, and the baseball team came through, so I'm sure Ralph did as well. So again, we just appreciate you guys supporting them and giving them a reason to rock with us for so many years. But Michael, let's talk about this baseball team, man, because they deserve to be talked about. Oof. Go up to, I think I titled my article the other day, they went up to Winston-Salem and they cast the demon out of the deacons, man. They just, it was exactly the type of weekend you wanted to see from this baseball team, because, you know, you stretch back and maybe they listened to our last episode on the plane ride up because we were a little bit harsh on them. But going into this weekend series, you're talking about a team that had a disappointing showing in Arlington. They competed, they beat Michigan. They at least competed with Auburn, but then they were non-competitive against Nebraska after losing to Auburn. Then you come back, you do a 9-game win streak, which is great, but who was it against?
Right.
You're not going to be playing the Northern Kentuckys out in Omaha and stuff like that. Then you play Florida in a midweek. I know it's a midweek. Midweek pitching is totally different. We've talked about this before. That series needs to be moved to a weekend. And you lose it. So now you're sitting there at 1-3 versus Power 4 programs, and you're like, man, did we like overhype this team? Because anytime they play someone good, it just doesn't look like it's supposed to. And then you go up to Wake, and we don't, in fairness, we don't know what Wake is yet because they haven't really played a lot of good teams. They played Stanford out of the ACC, Houston. That's really about the only decent teams they played so far. But they're still number 12. That's still a team that regularly competes in the postseason. That's a darn good baseball program up there in Winston-Salem. So for you to go up there and then being ranked number 12 at the time, 11-0 at home, 15-2 on the regular season, and absolutely pants them at their home stadium was amazing to see from a Florida State fan perspective. It just it was like, whoo, like a weight off your back. Like, this is finally the team that we knew they could be when they start clicking. So whatever they did between Florida and this game, hopefully they can keep it up. I mean, let's just talk about this weekend real quick. You only gave up 12 hits on the entire weekend, and you hit 10 home runs of your own. That's about as dominant as it gets. On Friday, you get a 10-0 run rule victory. Wes Mendez throws a seven-inning complete game shutout, absolutely dominant from Wes on the mound. Then you come back on Saturday, you have a 2-0 pitcher's duel, but you do end up getting the win. Trey Beard looks like everything that you wanted him to be as the number one pitcher coming in from the portal, a guy that had 118, I think it was, strikeouts at Florida Atlantic last year, sets a career high, 14 Ks on the day. I think he only had like one walk, and I mean, just no runs allowed. it was everything you wanted to see and then some, because when you came into it, you were like, okay, I know they had to replace a lot with Jamie Arnold and Joey Vellini.
Right.
Well, Wes is doing pretty a darn good job of stepping into Jamie's shoes. Yep. But Trey was kind of like, okay, he was sick early in the season. Mm-hmm. You didn't really get to see. We had to shuffle the pitching staff. And then he's like, okay, he looked really good against Northern Kentucky. But it's Northern Kentucky. So we still hadn't seen him pitch against that higher power four level team yet while he's wearing Garnet Gold. If this is an indication of what it's going to look like, gives this team a legitimate ceiling, which is amazing. And so then Sunday, you come back looking for the sweep. You already clinched the series win. You get the 12-6 win. Bryson Moore retired 16 of 24 batters, only allowed one run. Bullpen was a little shaky in that game, gave up 5 hits, 5 runs over 3 1/3. Not exactly what you want to see from them, but I will at least say on Saturday, Johnny Abraham was lights out in relief. So you get the win, yet you have a good offensive showing in 2 out of 3 games, 10 runs in the first game, 12 runs in the third game. Looks really good. And for me, Michael, I'll throw it back to you on this, but you know, this is probably one of the most complete series wins that I've seen from FSU in some time, right? Yep. If you think back to last year, that was a really good super regional team.
Yep.
They only swept 2 ACC series last year, and that was Boston College and Virginia Tech, and neither one of those teams even made a regional. So the fact that you swept the 12th ranked previously was 12th ranked and fastest growing brand in the ACC, if you didn't know that.
Apparently.
You beat them and you sweep them in dominant fashion. So to me, that sets the stage for the ACC this year to say, man, this team's going to be a force to be reckoned with, because again, I don't know what Wake's going to be, but that's a good ball club. And so to go up there and sweep them in a dominant fashion, to see, you know, your Friday and Saturday starter look lights out, your Sunday starter, Bryson Moore, starting to put together better and better performances. Obviously there's a little bit of a gap between Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday. The biggest concern for me out of this whole series is right now, Johnny Abraham is about the only arm I truly trust out of the bullpen. So you really need these starters to go long 6 and 7 inning outings. Now the offense did have, I think, 16 strikeouts on Saturday in the pitcher's duel, but Wake's going to have some good pitchers too. So that's going to happen on occasion. At least it wasn't, you know, 2-1, 2-0, 5-3. It was 10 and then 12 at the end. So you saw the offense jump up. So, man, great, great showing from Florida State up in Winston-Salem as they sweep Wake in dominant fashion. Give me some thoughts on what you saw up there this weekend, man.
Yeah, while I'm giving you your thoughts, can you look up the name of that Wake Forest pitcher from Saturday? Because that dude was legit. I mean, my goodness. He is breaking – his breaking ball, I mean, just the timing of the pitches, the way he controlled it.
And you had told me, too, that he came into that game, like he was hot coming into that game.
He was 4-0.
He was their best pitcher, Chris Lavonis.
He was, I think he was 4-0. He had a 1.43 ERA, if I remember that correctly. I mean, he was hot. He was good. And he proved, I don't know why he's not their ace. I'm surprised because the other guy, I mean, we lit him up.
Now, Blake Morningstar, I think they said he gave up 3 home runs in the first 17 games and Florida State took him for 5.
Exactly.
That guy was having a bad day.
He's having a bad day for sure. Well, you know, I liked your title about, took the demon out of the Deacons.
Yeah.
I love that. I would also say, you know, I love the saying of how, you know, we walked into your trap and took over your trap.
Yep.
That's what we did. That was a absolute ownership of Florida State. They should call that stadium, I think it's the Couch Stadium, they should call that Hauser North or whatever, because that they dominated. And I loved at the fact that you know, obviously we get Wes, you expect that out of Wes, you expect a strong showing out of your ace. I love that the bats woke up. Then on Saturday, going against a really good pitcher, so let's give him credit there. He was a really good pitcher. Mm-hmm. You found a way to stretch across 2 runs. Obviously, Trey Beard is what you hope for when you got him from FAU, to give you 14 Ks, 6 6 2/3, only 1 hit in those 6 2/3 innings. I mean, that's incredible.
Dominant stuff.
Dominant. But then I think the clap, the hand on the high five, ought to go to Bryson Moore. He hadn't really showed you a lot so far in the season. Yeah. I kind of went into Sunday's game thinking, well, this is probably where they're going to, you know.
Yep. And he gave up a leadoff home run. First batter of the game. I was like, well, exactly. It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate it. Shutout gone. All of that. But then for him to recover, right, and get you through that until the offense woke up. I mean, I thought, gosh, what a just a workmanlike attitude that Moore took to get you through that, you know, 5 2/3, only gave up 4 hits, 1 run. One earned run and 7 Ks. And then obviously he got it to the bullpen, which I'm with you, Jesse. Abraham's the only arm I actually trust out of that bullpen. Yeah. And this has been a consistent problem. We talked about this in another episode. I'm going to bring it up again. This has been a consistent problem with Florida State baseball under Link Jarrett. The bullpen has not been reliable. And we went out this year. There was a concerted effort this year to go get reliable arms to bring out of the bullpen, and we're still not seeing it. Now, what I will say, too, is this. I believe Wake is going to be a really good team. Mm-hmm. And I believe in the NCAA committee's eyes, when they're going to seed all this, this series is going to come into play. Yeah. Because that was a good team that you walked into their trap and you took over their trap.
Yeah, I mean, you beat Wake to sleep, for sure. And you're right. Under Posey and Link Jarrett, look, they've done a great job with their starting aces, right? With these guys, with Vellini, with Arnold, with all these guys. But the bullpen has always been a bit of a problem. And it just makes most Florida State fans, like, I'm not saying they got Chris Kinnear and Meebler. Right. They have had good outings, and they can have good outings. But again, like, it's, you went out and got a Gabe Nard that you just never see anymore. Cole Stokes, and he's had some up and down performances. And it's just like, you have that collective hold your breath every time the bullpen takes a game over, which is why, like I said, you are going to feel nervous in those 2-0 games where a Mendez or a Trey Beard has to hand the ball off with 2 innings left. It just makes you nervous against really good competition. So that's why you need the bats to wake up too, to give you that little bit of offensive cushion. Because again, when they made that run late on Sunday, they scored 5 runs late in the game. It didn't matter because you were already so far ahead. So it's kind of a twofold thing here, right? You have really great starting pitching. You have inconsistent bullpen outside of Johnny Abraham, but you also need the offense to be consistent to support late game situations, because they're going to be nerve-wracking if it's a 1 or 2 run game. Because, and, I mean, to come in and – sorry to cut you off, but one run across – you know, looking at the starting pitching, 19 innings, and then you give up 5 and 5 or 3 1/3. That's scary, man. That's scary when you're playing good teams.
Absolutely scary. And that's the only point I wanted to make, is that on the other side of my worry is when the bullpen takes over, that offense cannot go to sleep, and they are still swinging at absolutely ridiculous pitches. There's one pitch where Miles Bailey swung at a ball in the other batter's box. Like, why are we swinging at that? And I get it. I play, you know, MLB The Show, and sometimes I swing at the most ridiculous pitches on there, okay? For sure, I get it. Sometimes that ball coming out of that pitcher's hand look like it's coming straight down.
Hardest thing to do in professional sports.
It's the swing at a breaking ball, right? It's a slider. It's the 12-6 curve. It's the cutter. I get it. I know it. I know it's hard. But man, we've got to have better plate discipline and stop swinging at these ridiculous pitches. Because honestly, if you want to look at why the offense dies, especially on Sunday's game, right? We get 12 runs. We're almost scoring almost. And then we go on this, I think it was like 4 or 5 innings where it's just 3-3, 3-3, 3-3.
Yeah.
3-3 down. And they're just scoring runs now, because it's through the bullpen. That's my only other concern. Is when the bullpen takes over, the offense tends to go quiet, and we can't have that happen.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about it, if you face a good pitcher like they had on Saturday, the Lavonis kid, if you hadn't had Trey Beard out there sitting down 14 guys, you might not have won that game. But, again, it was a really, really good showing from them. I mean, you're starting 3. Went 19.1 combined innings, 7 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 32 strikeouts. 32 Ks on the weekend. So great showing from baseball, and that sweep moves them up to number 11 in this week's D1 poll. I think they're around number 10 or number 11 in the rest of the polls there. So, you know, because baseball can't just use one poll. We have used six of them. But either way, they climbed up, and that's what they needed, because they had started to, you know, they had slipped a little bit down to the 20th, I think it was, before that. And so it was nice to get it. Now, coming up this week, you get Bethune-Cookman at home, and that's a game that you should win. But man, Bethune-Cookman can be a little tough. You played them in a regional, I think it was last year or the year before. Yep. And they scared you a little bit there for a little time. But then you don't get time to take a breath, because here's the thing. People were talking about, I saw some comments on our social media where they were like, okay, so are we for real, or is Wake maybe not, or what do we take from this? And I said, well, you're going to find out, because you get a chance to back it up next weekend as number 10 NC State comes into your house, right? And so you're going to have to back it up with another good performance against another really good team. But that's what we talked about before, right, in the preseason show, is this ACC gauntlet is going to be tough. I think like five of your 10 or 12 opponents or whatever that you play were going to be ranked. And this isn't the last ranked team that you got to play this season. So you got another big opportunity coming up this weekend to prove yourself as well. But man, that's ACC. If they're not good at a lot of things, they're good at baseball for sure. It's a deep conference, so it's going to be tough. But man, great, great showing by Florida State baseball up in Winston-Salem. This is just like we said, man, it's one of the cleanest series of baseball that I've seen them play in a while. And it really kind of quieted the nerves of what we saw against Nebraska and Florida and things like that. So hopefully you get Florida back in 2 weeks when you play them in Jacksonville. But now the last thing we want to talk about is basketball before we get up out of here, as their season is officially over. Man, it's a disappointment. I will say that. I hate that they declined the NIT. But you know what, man? I think the hard part about it is it's hard as a fan, because – I think myself and most of the people watching, we were having so much fun watching the rebound that this team did, that you just didn't want to see them end in a heartbreaking loss. You wanted to see them be able to go on and play more basketball. That's what we wanted. But at the end of the day, you just have to respect how it went down, right? I mean, you hear Luke Laux talk about how, you know, we will compete. We would have played. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure he wanted to play.
Yeah.
But he left it up to a vote for the seniors, and the seniors voted that they did not want to continue. And so you have to respect that. They're the guys that are putting their body on the line, whether we like it or not. You know, I mean, we kind of had this conversation off the air, and, you know, I don't want to go too deep into this or sound too harsh here, but I mean, you just kind of look at the modern era of athletics, right? Notre Dame doesn't get what they want, so they kind of they throw in the towel. We don't want to play if we don't get our way.
Right.
You know, you don't make the tournament, you get the NIT bid. We don't want to play because it's not what we wanted to be into. It's just kind of the way, unfortunately, modern sports are going. You know, I know when I played sports, it was like you never knew when it was going to be the last time you got to lace them up.
Right.
So you always wanted to have that opportunity. I'm sure not all of the six seniors are going to get an opportunity to go play professional ball. Now, to be fair, a lot of these guys probably, I don't know about an NBA future, but have a professional future of some sort in the basketball world. And so they need to get ready for that. And it also will give time for Luke Laux and his staff to go out and start building that roster for next year, ensuring you keep that top 10 class in the fold. Right. Let's get started early on the portal. Let's figure out what guys we want to retain. And to be fair, man, there isn't much value in the extra minutes. Like I saw another comment where a guy was like, well, think of all the practice you're going to miss. I'm like, but five of your top six guys are seniors that can't come back anyway.
Correct.
So it's not like a bowl game in football where you can just roll into it with half your starters out. You only got so many guys on a basketball team. You know what I mean? And to be in the NIT, it's not just one bowl game. So it doesn't work the same way. Either everybody's in or nobody's in. So, yeah, man, I mean, again, to my point, it's a little bit disappointing, but I can understand the decision. For me, it's more that I think you were one of the hottest teams in the country. I think you could have got – maybe you should have. You deserved, by the way you played at the end of the season, to get into the March tournament. You didn't because of the way you played at the beginning of the season. For me – I know no one is going to clap for you for hanging an NIT banner, right? Nowadays, most people are going to laugh at you because a lot of teams opt out of it. But when is the last time this basketball team won anything meaningful, right?
Like, or hung a banner, yeah.
Exactly. I would not be mad at all about them potentially hanging an NIT banner. And if you can push Duke to the brink, you can probably have a good chance of winning the NIT after half the teams opt out anyway. So, you know, it's a trend that it is, man, but it is what it is. It's disappointing that the season ended that way. I'm going to talk a little bit more about what they were able to do here in just a second. But, you know, I would have loved to see him play, but it is what it is. The team voted on it, and you got to respect that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, and we talked about this in the pre-show, it's just this era of college sports, you know, when we've put and I say we as fans, because this is true, we've put a lot of pressure on these college programs because of the money we're donating. That's a big thing. We've put a lot of pressure on these programs to say basically that if you don't make the college football playoff, if you don't make the NCAA tournament, if you don't make the college, you know, baseball or college softball tournament, then anything else is just a obligatory participation trophy. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And so I totally understand that the seniors said, hey, some of us are injured. Now, this is what has been reported by some credential media, that some of them are injured. Some of them have pro prospects overseas. And so they want to get started on that immediately, then having to go through practice and do all that stuff. And Luke gave them the ability to vote on that and decided, hey, okay, if that's what you guys want to do, that's what you guys are going to do. And again, like you said, like the practices, they only... You're not going to practice those seniors. You would practice most of your starting people, which meaning the kids that might come back, might, again, remember, that's a key word, might come back, would still not get the same number of practice times anyways. So I get that they don't play. It doesn't, like, I'm not mad about them not playing. It makes me sad because, like you said, they were one of the hottest teams in the country to end the season. And if the NCAA tournament was just based on what you did at the end of the season, they would have definitely been in. But because they have to also count what you did at the beginning of the season, it didn't deserve to be in. And this gives Luke, I'm make a case for this. This gives Luke actually a little bit of an advantage. Because they're not in, they're going to get a way head start on trying to find what they need from the transfer portal. They need a guard and they need two bigs, a power forward, a four. We don't do positions really more in college basketball, but or in basketball in general. They need two bigs, at least one that can step out and shoot, and they need an electric guard that they can find in the portal. He's going to get a head start to be able to go and try to start negotiating. Remember, FSU basketball is working with the smallest rev share pool, NIL pool, among the Power Four. Don't believe me? Go look it up. It is literally almost zero with what he's working with. And so he needs this head start to try to sell his vision to these portal guys, to sell what numbers. He's asking these guys to take a 30, 40, and in some cases, maybe even a 50% discount than what they're going to be getting from other programs. So he's got to have the head start to try to get them to buy into what he's doing before these other big schools who are in the tournament come trying to poach these guys. So I actually see this as a little bit of an advantage for him not playing so they can get a head start on building next year's team.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense because, you know, he said before, you got to find some gems. You got to find some guys that are close to home, some diamonds in the rough. And if you think back to when Link Jarrett and the baseball program had that terrible season in 23 when they first started, Link actually will tell you, like, it sucked at the time, but it was one of the most beneficial things that happened because while everyone else was worried about the postseason and regionals and all that, we're out scouting players and we're out getting guys out of the portal. And that's how they had such a good portal class. They went to Omaha the next year. Yep. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen for Florida State basketball, but it does give you the opportunity to sit down and have those conversations with the current players. They're not making that three, four more games down the road a month later because the signing period is in April. So you can sit down and have those conversations now and you can say, are you staying? Are you going? So we know what we need to shop for so you can get out and do those. And to your point about the NIL, I saw just to give you an idea of how impressive it is what they're doing, I saw a credentialed media outlet said that when they introduced Luke Laux, the estimate was around $1.5 million for that team. Now, to put that in perspective, I saw a tweet the other day. Now, again, all of these NIL numbers are estimated. Nobody really knows the exact numbers. But what the tweet that I saw the other day was about the largest gaps in the round of 64. So it just gives you an idea, right? Duke's budget in NIL is estimated to be $12 million. And so a team that you're talking about spends $1.2 to $1.5 was the number they said, just took a team to the wire that spends $20 million. They have number 13 Hawaii in here spending $1.2 million. So you're spending as much money on your basketball team, Cal Baptist, $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, the numbers are what they are. They are very real. And so what I hope is that with the way they finish the season, that number will climb, I hope, because if he can do what he did
with that much,
imagine what he can do with a $3.5, $4 million, $5 million budget.
Yep.
But, and to that point, what I want to close with basketball with is I don't want to let how the season ended with the disappointment, because let's be honest, man, it's to your point where you say that we fund these things now with the fans, we expect the money we donate. That's the hard part about this for us. More games is the payoff for the fans that invest in the program. That's the part that stinks, right? We're not the ones playing, but we're the ones paying. And so when we don't kind of get more of that product, it stinks. But I don't want to let the kind of downer of not playing more basketball ruin how the season ended and what they did, right? This team is going to get to go out by saying we push the best team in the country right now to the wire in the ACC tournament. And so just one thing I want to read you real quick that I went through to show how impressive it was what they did in that ACC tournament game is after Duke won the ACC, you know, I'm a numbers nerd. I like to sit around and just I get 5 minutes of free time and I start crunching stats for no apparent reason. It's just how my brain is wired. But with number one Duke winning the ACC title, and I posted this on social media the other day, so this is why you need to be following us on social media so you can get these kind of nuggets and so you can get in on the conversation with us across X, Instagram, Facebook, all those. Make sure you check us out there. But with number one Duke winning the ACC title, here's just something to think about with Florida State basketball. Over the last 10 games that Duke has played, they are 10-0. They beat number 10 Virginia by 4, Clemson by 12, Florida State by a mere 1 point on a missed game winner. They beat number 19 UNC by 15, NC State by 29, number 10 UVA by 26, Notre Dame by 44, number 3 Michigan by 5, Syracuse by 37, and Clemson by 13. Only 9 teams all season in 34 games even finished within 2 possessions, 6 points of Duke. 6 points or less. One of those was the very first game of the season against Texas. 6 of those 9 teams are currently ranked, and FSU did it twice. Florida State, you know, again, there's no moral victories.
No.
I'm not trying to say anything like that. I'm just trying to show when you know what he was doing with a $1.2 to $1.5 million budget against this team that has $12 million and all the cachet of the program in the world. But the way they played down the stretch proved they could go toe-to-toe with the best team in the country as well as anyone else in those last 10 games. And those were some pretty darn good teams in those 10 games that I named. And then you think about it, they beat 3 teams that are in the tournament right now, SMU, Clemson, and Miami. They finished within 1 possession of 2 number 1 seeds, Duke and Florida, and a number 3 seed, Virginia, a team that they should have beat. They finished 10-8 in ACC play, the best record they've had in 5 years, and a school record for the most conference wins by a first-year head coach. You know, man, again, like you see the momentum. I think it was like 10-3 or 10-4 over their last 13 or 14 games. They were the first team in ACC history to start conference play 0-5 and then finish at least 500 or better at any point. So it's just, I don't want the disappointment how the season ended to cast a shadow over what the momentum they created. Because here's the thing, and I'll throw it back to you on this. The season might be over, but the foundation for the future has been laid. And it's exciting to know that the more excitement you get in the program, the more resources he gets, the more chance he has to actually have time to go out and scout players and get them in and recruit players from high school and get them in and develop them, it's only going to be up from here. So, man, I'm excited about the future. I hate how it ended, but the foundation's been laid, man, and it's looking pretty good.
Absolutely. I mean, to be one of the, I mean, they were one of the few teams that had a, that had won 10 plus games in their last 13 games. One of the few to end the season going 10 for 13, right? You're talking about conference champions who are in the NCAA tournament in Florida State. That's what you're talking about, right? Florida, they were on like, I think a 13 game win streak before they lost to Vanderbilt in the conference semifinals. And they like, they're one of the hottest teams in the country right now. People are projecting Florida to win the national championship. They have a, I think the odds, not they're right behind Duke as odds on favorite. They're right behind Arizona as odds on favorite to win the national championship. So you got Duke, Arizona, Florida. And within that, Florida State was one of the hottest teams in the country at the same time of the top four teams going into the NCAA tournament. So you're excited about what Luke has built. And now, again, to go to Jesse's point, with a $1.1 million NIL budget, he has a top 10 recruiting class coming in next season. Top 10, people. And if he can get a decent guard, and two bigs that are, and one that can at least shoot from the outside, guys, we're looking at maybe a run. I'm not predicting a conference championship or anything, but at least a appearance in the NCAA tournament where Florida State has been before. And gosh, if they don't cancel the tournament in 2020, that was a national championship looking team right
there. It was.
I believe that Luke can get the right pieces, this could be an exciting college basketball season next season for Florida State basketball.
Yeah, and being young and energetic and ties to the NBA and the history that he has, the rings that he got with, you know, the Golden State Warriors and stuff like that. You know, again, man, it shows belief. That's how you land the top 10 class with a $1.5 million budget or whatever it is. I mean, NFL can't land a top 10 class with a $20 million budget. So, I mean, it's just impressive of what he's been able to do so far. You know, the only unfortunate part to the season is that it's not like football where you just lose the first game or two and they're like, well, you know, like Alabama last year, it's a different team than it was in the beginning of the season. So that's the unfortunate part. But again, man, I have a feeling they'll be back dancing before too long. And Luke Laux tweeted out and said that. He even said in his tweet, there's a couple teams in the field that I see that we would probably beat right now. So talk your talk, big dog.
That's right.
You've earned that right. And so, man, just excited for that. But that's going to be it for today's show, guy. We just wanted to talk about some football here with this over-under season win totals. We also had the baseball series that we had to get out of the way because, man, those guys were taking names and kicking tail this weekend in Winston-Salem. So excited to see them back in action against number 10 NC State softball this week. Talking about dominating opening series, ACC series win. I don't even want to say squeeze the juice out of Syracuse. They pulverized that orange. That thing is like, they turned that thing into pulp. I mean, they crushed them. Two run rule victories, and then they won the last one there. I think it was 11-6 or 12-6 there at the end.
And Isa Torres.
Unreal the way she has returned. I'm pretty sure right now she's hitting over 600. I think it's like 648. Matter of fact, I'm almost 99% sure. I just wrote a softball article for the website about their win over Syracuse. I'm pretty sure she leads the NCAA in batting average.
Jeez, man.
Unreal what that girl's doing right now. Jaisani Beecham, I think, is hitting like 350. You know, Jazzy in the Circle is always really good. So, man, this team, I mean, they're 26-4 now, I think, or 25-4. So lots of exciting stuff in the round ball sports going on right now. Obviously, you know, football camp is closed, but it's going on. So we're just going to keep our ear to the ground for that. And on the next episode, we'll bring you guys some updates. But, man, I enjoyed this one, Michael. We got a lot to talk about, a lot of fun subjects to cover here. If you guys are enjoying this episode, drop a like and subscribe on the YouTube channel, man. I actually just checked our analytics this morning. On our last episode or on our channel over the last month, I think 55% of viewers are unsubscribed. So go ahead and just hit that like and subscribe button. It really does help the channel out. It helps us keep it free, helps us reach other Noel fans. You might be subscribed or think you're subscribed and you're not, just double check. Yep. Again, we would greatly appreciate that. It's free. Doesn't sign you up for nothing. Doesn't cost anything. Really appreciate you guys doing that. Also, a rate and review on the podcast is another great way to help us grow. I know a lot of you guys listen on Apple Podcasts. 5-star review would be great there as well. Follow us on social media, like I said, and make sure you check out our website, plantthespear.com. I have been writing furiously over there trying to keep up with some articles on the website. So make sure you guys check that out as well. But again, we appreciate y'all watching, and we will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.
Go Noles.
2026 regular season win total. Just happy to be. I don't want to do that. I don't want to say happy to be back because we're not back. I keep saying that. Like, you can't be back every episode. 2026 regular season win totals are here. Where's Florida State sitting at, and what do we think and feel about it? What do we think about it? My brain's wired. I have one hamster, and if he falls off the wheel, we're in trouble. Okay. All right. Let's try this again for real this time. Okay. We might as well just get it out of the way. I'm just waiting for you to start laughing.
No, man, I had it.
Okay. I didn't have it. Okay. I didn't have it.
2 seconds later.
Let's go. 3. I knew it.
I was so good.